Janet, Clark County.
Malene Mosley, Town of Yackel.
Cherry Schrocher, City of Battleground.
Ron Onslow, City of Ridgefield.
Pete Bell, City of Camas.
Robert Roy Staff, Clark County.
And?
Judy Sheehan, City of Vancouver.
All right, approval of the June 10 minutes, I entertain a motion.
I so move that we accept minutes as published.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right, Michael, program year 2018, paper.
Yay. This will be fast, I'm not going to go over, but we have three copies, including this one here. This is the actual paper, the Consolidated Annual Performance Evaluation Report that gets submitted to HUD via IDIS. It's not a paper thing. The Integrated Dispersing and Information System. And you're free to read it, and we are happy to send you the paper copy of the paper if you want. And we have two additional copies. Janet has them if you want to walk out of here with them. But what I recommend, you take home and you post by your cube or your office and pride for everything you have done with home and CDBG funds is this poster, which details all the expenditures and activities that have been undertaken with home and CDBG funds during this previous program year. So, you know, that's what we do with the paper is we report on the previous program year. And so you can see the, you know, the 17 activities, the 14 partners, the $4,147,474 that were spent, and the pie chart will give you just kind of like by category, by function, what you know, how those expenditures split up, you know, functionally, things like home buyer, multifamily. I do want to draw your attention to program administration. Out of that $4 million, the program administration, so it's basically Clark County staff, implementation costs, you know, doing the RFAs, the RFA selection, reporting to HUD, that is $543,644. So that's part of that cost as well. But if you have any specific questions of the information that's in the poster, I know Councilor Olson already had a long, detailed readout at a council meeting of all the projects. So partly out of compassion to Councilor Olson, I don't want to reread everything. But if anyone has, you know, take the poster. If you have any specific questions, I'm open for questions.
Were they thrilled?
The counselors?
They were engaged.
They were engaged, yes.
All right.
Yes. So.
Good stuff. So no questions on the paper. All right. April Library Report.
That's this form, the non-color.
Good morning.
And if you'll recall, about just under a year ago, we thought it'd be good to start doing the quarterly reports with you, just as far as tracking the projects that are out there and what their status is. That's what we're doing.
So we'll start with the Community Development Block Grant project. So this report is through June, and I'll give you like a few updates on what's happening since then, just to kind of get us up to date. The Washougal K Street project, the construction has been complete, but we are still waiting, and we are still waiting to today for the final closeout documents. The Ridgefield South 8th Avenue project, construction was nearly complete in June. It has now since been fully completed. We are working on getting the final closeout packet.
You don't have that?
I do not yet. I've been talking with Kirk and with Brenda, and with the prime contractor, like trying to put a rush on it. Kurt really didn't want to send two invoices through the council for approval. He's wanting to bill all of it at once, which is why there's very little actual build on that project. So I've been pressuring them to get me the documents that I need, but have not been as successful as I'd hoped.
Well, I'll stop by and
talk with.
There's no reason it's been done for.
I agree. And they're the same prime contractor on the Washington project, so it's been a little bit frustrating. I do have some documents that I received last week to review, to verify, and then I'll know exactly where I'm at on that.
Okay.
On both of those projects.
I'll tell them just to get it done.
Thank you.
I mean, encouraged.
The Woodland sidewalk and ADA ramps has been doing their engineering. And so they've been working on that. There's been some changes in the amount of funds that they have available, so they've been looking at like restricting all the pieces of the project. If you recall that one, it was sidewalks in one stretch and then ADA corners in some other areas, so it's kind of a bigger project across Woodland and stuff, so they're still working on getting that done. I don't believe the construction has started on that project. The Yakult Hope Street improvements, that one is in design phase for that project. The ESD 112 modular acquisition, they have placed the modular on site. We received a billing just last week, I believe, so that project is nearing completion.
Can I ask on the Yakult one, is that, who owns the railroad?
The BYCX Railroad.
So the county owns the railroad. Is
yeah,
that
the county owns the railroad. The problem is the county's putting in the railroad's putting in a new facility, and if they do what was originally intended, once the railroad puts in that new facility, everything will have to be pulled out and changed. So this was delayed so that it could be done once
I was wondering because I woke up this morning thinking about we needed a permit to go over the railroad, Burlington Northern Railroad in Ridgefield to access our port area. And it started in 2002 and we got the final signature a month ago.
I thought you said the Port of Ridgefield moved slow.
Well, it's the Port of Ridgefield's project.
Oh, okay.
Coincidentally, I'm a little different than some in that when WASDOT was dragging their feet on our overpass, I called them every day. They got tired. But they were nice. I was always nice. I said, good morning, and they'd say, hi, Ron. And who did you want to talk to this morning? And I'd say one of two people. And finally they did what I asked because I thought it was reasonable. But I just wondered whether other people who live way out in the county, they get up late, so.
Good morning, Ron.
At any rate, I just wondered whether they had any connection with, like, a Burlington Northern, but it's the county, huh?
Yeah, it's
the county's slow on this, is that?
What's that?
The county's slow on this?
Well, we just own it. We're not operating it.
Yeah.
Operator.
There were some issues with them getting their permits because of trails or something. I don't know all the details.
Oh, okay. Well, that
I know
makes
we're
sense.
Waiting on the railroad.
For that overpass? Mm-hmm. Or the
trellis
repair?
The crossing.
Moving on, we have the FFC group home. It's the home has been purchased, and they are working to remodel for accessibility. The Hispanic Metropolitan Chamber has served 6 new businesses between April and June. They're up to 25 for the year. The Salvation Army, their new community center construction is nearly complete at this point. I believe they're opening in November is what I heard for their grand opening date.
They're with it.
Yes. The Vancouver Housing Authority, the shelter improvements, there's been a little bit of setback on the prime contractor for this as far as how much they're actually going to be able to complete to complete. The bids came in much higher than anticipated, so there's been some negotiations going on for that project. The Battleground, oh, and then the rest of them are 2019 projects, so most of them are still in the very beginning stages. One update I'll give for Ridgefield, because this is a new one for me. They are required to, we have to do environmental reviews for every project that we do. A lot of times we're asked to do an archaeological survey because we have high likelihood of finding artifacts when we're doing any ground disturbances. Ridgefield did a survey. This is the first time they found anything. So they did find a couple of artifacts. However, the agency that does the surveys believes that these were actually brought in with the filled dirt. They found pieces of plastic. They call that a poker chip, along with a couple of artifacts. I think one was an arrowhead. And
found an arrowhead?
I think so. But they really do think that it's just from the filled dirt. They don't think it's actually site-specific because of all the ground disturbance that has occurred in that area already. However, they don't think they're going to be able to get away from having to have a monitor on site during any of the ground disturbing. So that's the next step for Ridgefield to kind of determine
how. We had to do that for Overlook Park, and it's kind of interesting in that the artifacts that sometimes that they found were rock chips and from campfires or whatever, and it's like, oh my God, those are everywhere. I mean, they're everywhere. And I don't know about most of you, but when I was a kid, there were no campgrounds that had campfire areas. We had to build them all ourselves. So, you know, I'm not sure the Indians did all of the.
That was a long time ago.
I have one.
So what that means for us at the county is
1800, at least.
Yeah, meet the criteria now.
For the county, we will now have to. We cannot move this project to be exempt because there's no effect. There will be a monitoring required, so we are going to have to actually advertise this project to make sure that there's no other comments from the public. We did not receive any feedback from any of the tribes that we contacted. I think there's 8 tribes that are interested in the lands in Clark County. But this might pique their interest a little bit more. We don't know. But that'll add a step in the process before we can even get to the contract stage for the project. The other ones are just kind of in the beginning stages, waiting for us to finish our environmental reviews. The share elevator project did ask to go quickly and then had a setback with a fire. So their environmental review is complete and the contract is drafted, and we expect that to start in the next couple of weeks. Fun fact, if you're ever doing any modernizations of any elevators, it could take 14 to 16 weeks for the parts to get delivered. So wow, prepared for that. but we're hoping to, and we believe it'll be going in the next week or two. When we look at the Home Investment Partnership Program, the Reach Isabella Court Phase 2 is now fully complete and grand opening, and you saw a picture in the caper of that new beautiful building. There's 49 units now available. Proud Ground, they've purchased the 3 homes that they have under contract for that contract for their 2018 award. And then the last 3 projects are all the brand new ones that are just kind of in the beginning stages of figuring out where they are, and us working through environmental assessments and environmental reviews depending on the type of project. On the last page is about the tenant-based rental assistance programs. Everybody's kind of moving forward. Community Services Northwest, you'll see that this is their 2017 project. They have spent out all of their CDBG case management funding, but not all of their home rental assistance funds. And so they are still required to serve, and they'll have to find their own funding to do the case management side of that. They have served 16 households, with 6 of them graduating from the program. Janice has served 14 households through June. I believe they've added 2 new ones recently. They just completed the spend out of that contract and are starting their 2019 funding. Lifeline has not spent any money. They still have not spent any money. It's been a lot of technical assistance for that program. Aspire has served 54 households, and they have just recently spent out all of that money. So they, in the end of September, finished that contract, and they've moved on to their 2019 award. Salvation Army has served 27 households to date and are moving along just fine. And then the new ones are the ones that were just funded. So. Are there any questions about any of those projects?
I had one, and that was I believe that the on the Hispanic mm-hmm. one, that's the first time they've received money, right?
They've received it for, I think this is their third year.
I think this was their
second
year? Second, this is second award.
Second award.
Oh, it's the second one?
Yep.
Okay. I just wondered how that worked on advising a business. Could you explain it? Have you reviewed it at all, or what they do? Okay.
Yeah, so they, I guess it depends a little bit on the client, you know, who's coming in and what they need. But basically, they help the person look at their finances and develop the cost estimates of what their business is. They help them develop the business plan. And, you know, they do some mentoring, advising, and going through that process and setting it up. And the city also funds it. So in the funding that the county has provided, of course, it would be people who are living and their businesses are outside of the city limits, you know, city Vancouver limits. But I mean, does that answer your
question? Yeah, pretty much. How do they?
It's similar to what SBDC does.
Yes.
You remember Buck Heidrich?
No.
Did you know Buck at all before he moved away? So Buck worked for SBDC here.
Small business development.
Oh, yeah.
Mentor and shepherd these business startups and, you know, connect them to lending, help them put a business plan together and give them some.
Okay, and they staff it with paid staff or
yes.
volunteer?
They have one FTE that is the advisor to the clients
yeah.
that are coming in. And I believe, I'm not sure what, I can't remember the curriculum, but I do think that you have one paid staff, but they also connect the different people that are in the program to each other, you know, so they do kind of cohort stuff. But it is one paid professional staff that's doing the advising.
Okay.
And coaching.
Service
that's
in pretty high demand. When Buck was here, you know, I think the typical caseload you're expecting to carry for an SBDC employee is about 40, and he had 80 to 120 at any given time, and more who were contacting him for those services. So it's in really high demand.
I hope he was good.
Thank you. Do you have any insight or anything to add about Hispanic Chamber Services?
Mercy Corps did attend our pre-submittal meeting, so we're pretty sure that they're going to be applying this year.
It's pretty low-cost, high-impact economic development work that they do.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's funny, you mentioned Mercy Corps. My nephew still works for Mercy Corps, but he flies all over the world. And told the story of being in like Uzbekistan and visiting with families that were going to learn how to borrow money. And then at the end of the planting season, they had to pay that money back. And from the profits, they were supposed to get seed. And he said when they would be in arrears, he would have to go visit them. And he said he would walk into a hut that had a dirt floor, and everybody slept in the one room and cooked in the one room. And he said, you know, you're trying to tell them this is how democracy works.
Yes,
and capitalism works. And
$20.
Yeah. But anyway, he did that all around the world.
Okay, any other questions on the quarterly report? We'll move on to the 2020 CDBG home applications.
So actually the conversation on Mercy Corps is a good segue to this. We had our pre-submittal conference on October 4th. A couple of you were there. Basically, you know, so entities that are interested in submitting applications for this next round of Homer CDBG came, and we discussed what Rebecca's going to get into shortly about Neighborly, the new software that we're going to be using to receive and to score the applications. But I was excited to see Mercy Corps there. And I think they're going to be applying. We don't know any details of their proposal yet, because they haven't applied. And also, Hacienda CDC was there. So it would also be exciting if they cross the river and start doing some development over here. I think it would be really helpful and exciting. Who else was there? It was new that we hadn't seen before. I think those were the only two that really jumped out at me.
No, there was some of the normal players. We're going to have a tap for Humanity, but they won't be coming in this year. We talked to them, and we think it'll be better for them to come in for funding next year. And
that was based on, I don't remember the staff person that was their grant writer, that was there, just where they are in the development of their project. They were like, oh, you know, it'd be better for us to apply for the 2020 funds, next round, the 2020 funding round. Just because they don't think they'll be ready to actually break ground and execute like their project.
And it's the same, yes.
Yeah.
They do. And so they have acquired the property. So they're at least they're at that stage now. They've acquired the property, and they're doing a lot of the design work and then figuring out everything else. But we spoke to them. We let them know that a lot of times we can do previous funds that we had, so that they won't have to wait for our entitlement grant to come through. So once they do apply, we could get the money to them fairly quickly.
So they're going to have some hurdles on that project.
Yes.
I mean,
yes. Zoning.
They have pre-zone hurdles. They have wetlands hurdles. They have, I mean.
And one thing that was great, though, it was one of the first times with Evergreen that we had that we talked through it, and they're like, yes, we're not going to apply to this. We're not ready for it. We're gonna apply. Because, you know, yes, we want them to apply, and we want them to be successful in the application. We don't want them to apply, get awarded a fund, get awarded funds, and then sit on them and us have to recapture them. Or we also don't want them to submit a proposal and not be able to fund them, you know, because the project won't be ready.
Yeah, they're a long way away.
Yeah. As I mentioned, so we do have a new software that we are using instead of Zoom grants. Up to this point, we've received our applications, we've scored our applications in Zoom grants. What we use internally in managing our home and CDBG program is Zoom grants and CDM. CDM is a software that does a lot of the contract and loan tracking and management. Neighborly, which is the replacement software, is going to do both. And CDM was wonderful late 80s technology, maybe 90s, and it's pretty much tapped out. It is tapped out. In fact, the current version we have is not supported. There is a new CDM that was supposed you know, you have experience using it, it's not bad, but it's also at its limit of what we can do with it. So Neighborly is new, you know, it has room to grow. It it will not only let people submit proposals and us score proposals, but we'll be able to do invoicing through it, we'll be able to do loan management and contract management through it, we'll be able to solicit bids and have our contractor database in it, and it will be a lot, it has a lot of potential in creating reports for us, and you know, formatted so we can already enter information to HUD and IDIS. And in aggregate, it's going to save us money. You know, instead of, you know, when we, you know, paying for CDM and paying for Zoom grants, Neighborly is going to be a little bit cheaper than paying for both of those. So that's why we're making that transition. So Rebecca is going to get into a little bit of some of the things you can expect to see. And I think we're going to be doing some training with you as well as we get closer to the actual scoring. Do you want to take it?
Sure. Mm-hmm. So we had to make a few adjustments to how we've done things in the past. Some of them we wanted to do.
And this is what she's looking at.
And I'm actually have two documents, and this one and this one. One of the big changes is that we are no longer doing CDBG and home applications. We are doing public facilities and neighborhood improvements, which will be primarily CDBG funds. Actually, I think that one is all CDBG funds. Then we are also doing an application under asset and economic development, and that could be either CDBG or home funds, depending on what the applicant comes in for. And then we have affordable housing and homelessness.
And so what she's explaining well there, is we've moved away from having separate applications for home and CDBG. So in the past, people would apply for home, and they'd apply for CDBG, and they'd be within that application kind of indicating what they were applying for, whether it was social service or public infrastructure. And now it's really transparent to the applicant what kind of funds they're applying for. They're applying for what the project is about. So it's still, you know, ends up being kind of three different applications. It's still, I think it'll be less work for them than, you know, under home and CDBG, because it still would have branched out to about two or three different categories within each application anyway. So now it's just three categories that they apply for. Sorry.
So we still, when we look at the public facilities and neighborhood improvements, we still won't make infrastructure versus social service projects. They will not be competing against each other, so we'll still have that kind of separated out in there. But they're closely tied to what types of projects that they are. So that's really the closest thing to what we've done in the past under our CDBG application. The asset and economic development is going to be the Hispanic Chamber for, you know, Business Technical Assistance if the Vancouver Chamber comes in, Mercy Corps. And then also Proud Ground, Evergreen Habitat for Humanity, as they're building assets in homeownership. Those would also fall under this category. And then under the third category is our affordable housing and homelessness. And this is going to be our developing or rehabbing, you know, apartment complexes, along with our tenant-based rental assistance, that fall under this category. So we kind of, instead of doing it funding-wise, we're doing it more project-type-wise. So that's going to be a big change for the applicants and for the scores.
So does this mean that, like, programs like Proud Ground aren't going to be competing with things like SHARE and stuff like that?
So they would be competing, so the asset and economic development, so the home ownership programs and the technical assistance for businesses will be competing in the same category. What we did was we took a look at the last 3 years of what's been funded, and that's how much money we'll have in that pot, which is the average of what we've been spending on those projects anyway. So there will be a little bit of competition, but we don't, in that category, we don't really see it too much. when we look at the housing and homelessness, it'll be the construction projects and then the TBRA. They will not be competing against each other.
Okay.
And then the same for the public facilities. You'll have your social service projects and your infrastructure will be two categories. They will not be crossing over, competing against each other. So that is one big change that we have coming up with this. The other big change is the scoring. Zoom grants would allow us to go in and score as an administrator, and we would do several questions that had objective scores to them. We tied it out. This is how you get the points. For match would be one good example, and then we put the score in. Neighborly doesn't have that functionality yet. That is something they do want to get to. So we have, and we are, giving you guys control of 100% of the scoring, which is very different. We've never done that before. There are still a couple of questions that are objective. So we will be checking your scores to make sure we still have the match question. So we just want to make sure that they are getting, every application is getting what they should in just a couple of those questions. But otherwise, it's all on you guys. So you guys get to determine at 100% of the points versus usually it was around 60-40 in the past where we would do the objective scores.
Which I'm excited about. I think this is a really good thing. You know, we've always tried to be very careful about limiting staff input into, you know, be mindful about, you know, not putting our thumb on the scale and making sure it was projects that got funded were ones you wanted funded. And, you know, we will be doing some due diligence and making sure that the organizations and the proposals are eligible, you know, but other than that, it is going to be completely on you. We will, though, we will be, you know, with the quarterly reports, with, you know, we really want to make sure that with the notes, that we give you as much information as possible when you're doing the grading, so you're looking at the proposals, and you can see what the history of the organization with previous proposals is, you know, successful, unsuccessful, so you can weigh that in when you're doing your score.
One of the things we also put together for you in this packet, so this is one we will print for you again when it kind of comes closer, but we wanted to help you guys with understanding what would make a good response to those questions. So if you look at this document on the right, there's the scoring considerations. So the first question is worth 25 points. What would score the highest points? What should score like in a mid-range? And what would be a low-scoring project? So just kind of give you some ideas, some context for doing the scoring so you're not completely just guessing. I know a lot of you have, especially in the infrastructure, have a lot of knowledge, way more knowledge than we have, so you know really what makes good projects and things like that in that area, but some of the others might not have that. So we wanted to give you just a little bit of structure for those, for how you're scoring on that. Is there any other major change? I'm trying to think.
No, I think that's really it. You know, I'm really interested in kind of making our scoring more sophisticated, more informed, and more consistent. So as you guys go through this, you know, doing your scoring, it would be really helpful to us if you have ideas of just, you know, improving on this, because this is very, very basic right now in terms of, you know, this kind of answer gets this range of score. You know, this kind of answer gets the middle range. This kind of answer gives the lower range. You're pretty much experts, especially in terms, you know, if you're with the city or locality and you're talking the infrastructure pieces, give us feedback on what you consider, you know, high scoring answer, what that range should be, middle and low. So we can, you know, what I'd like to do is update guidelines for you and improve this moving forward, so that both UCPB scores as a whole become more consistent over time, and it'll also help individual scores be consistent in their scoring. So that, you know, if Ron Oslo is scoring, you know, an infrastructure project, you know, A, he's scoring it in the same way in the others, so that when, you know, when they rank out.
You still
will not have access to the scoring for your own practice. Yeah. That still won't happen.
but you know, you can break it out in a pretty good ranking, you know, that makes sense.
It also helps take bias out of his scoring. Yes. and that's a big deal. We did provide this to the applicants at our pre-submittal meeting so they can see what they put in so that they can work towards having a high-scoring application. We also, in the past, we've had home scoring guidelines, and it was a packet for the home applicants that kind of went through all the questions, and this is what we're looking for in the answers. We now have that for each one of the applicants' applications. So there's a guidelines, and it's a link to the neighborly application so they can easily access it and see also what we're looking for, and it has the scoring information in that.
And we're also, staff is making themselves available to applicants 2 days?
Yes.
Yes, 2 days, you know, just
drop in technical assistance,
where if they're submitting an application and they're having any issues or they have questions, they can just come in and receive any assistance they need. We can sit with them if necessary and look at their application. Not do it for them, not improve, but just give technical assistance so they can. So when you score it, you know, it will be as good an application as it can be.
The other improvement is we will be moving to your quarterly reports, or all of the programs will be doing the quarterly reporting through the system. We are currently starting to put in past projects that would still be in a quarterly reporting time frame. And so when that happens, we'll put a notification out like, okay, no more submitting a paper email quarterly report. You're going to now do it in the neighborly software. So we'll notify you when that happens, and we'll provide a little bit of guidelines on how you do that for that. We are still learning the software. We're babies in this whole new software. So you may have a lot of questions that we aren't able to answer, but we will get answers and get back to you as fast as we can. Neighborly has been extremely responsive, within minutes a lot of times, responding to our email. So it's been a really great relationship as we're moving over to this new software. And we do expect some really great things going into the future.
You want to talk CNA before we...
Sure. So one of the other big things that's coming out, and I just wanted to kind of give you a heads up. So 3 years ago, you might remember I came to all of the city council meetings talking about our community needs assessment. We had done a survey, and I wanted to talk at a forum. We did a community forum, and we invited you to come and attend to see what the data was saying about what the needs are of people who are low income in Clark County. We are getting ready to do that process again. We just finalized the survey that we'll be using last week. I'm sending it out for translations. So we'll be sending out the surveys that starts November 1st, and we'll be accepting surveys through January 31st. The survey is about 7 pages long. It is kind of long, but there's a lot of sections they can actually skip if they don't have those needs within their families. So we estimate it takes about 15 minutes to fill out the survey. We have a task force through the Community Action Advisory Board that we're working with that helped us with using an equity lens when we're going through the survey and doing all of the review on that as we're working through this process. And they've helped identify a bunch of organizations that we hadn't worked with in the past. All of our partner agencies, and I believe I have 90 on the list so far. That does not include the cities, but a lot of nonprofit organizations, schools, things like that. We will actually send them packets with flyers and all of the different surveys in 5 different languages. We're doing English, Russian, Spanish, Vietnamese, and Chukchis. And so they'll have those available. We're also putting it online. It will be available in all 5 languages online, which is a big improvement over last time. We were only able to do it in English last time. We had 11.
Online, we did have it Spanish and Russian.
Spanish and Russian in hard copies.
No.
We had 1,165 responses the last time, which is fantastic. It's much higher than any other community action agency in Washington State. including some of the really big ones. So my goal is to meet 1,100 again this year, and hopefully we will surpass that, but that's my goal. And then we'll be coming back out to the city council meetings when we get ready to do the forums. I'd also like to do more forums than just one, and I really want to do some small group discussions with people who are living or struggling financially, like in small groups rather than large forums too. So we have some big hopes for this community needs assessment. This is what it looked like last year. Michael and I spent 18 months of our lives putting this all together, so we hope that you guys have seen it. And I know a lot of agencies and some of our smaller funders, like the Community Foundation for Southwest Washington, use this all the time, so that makes my heart happy. But we hope that it gets used more this next one that we get to put together. So, and it will be adopted in our November meeting for the Community Action Advisory Board next year. So I have 1 year. 1 year, dude.
And just as a reminder, you know what this is households who are low income in Clark County telling us what their priorities and needs are. And what we use that information, you know, like we do that analysis, we validate it, but we use that information to guide our funding priorities with the Community Services Block Grant, and we inform other community funders around issues of human services and poverty on whatever we have found to help guide them. So it does, you know, in my mind, it's one of the more important and impactful things that the community, you know, Clark County Community Action does, because it can really impact how the county funds and approaches services in their community.
Along with a lot of other smaller funders that do the little grants for social services have used this, have gone in and done presentations. We will send this out to all of our partners. We'll do a press release, and then I'll send it out to our stakeholders list. And if you could get it out there, we'll have it on the county's social media feeds. But if you guys could also share the links to getting to that, it would be really helpful to make sure that we are reaching all corners of Clark County. We did a good job last year. We had responses from every zip code in the county. But we always are looking to do better, and any help we can get with that is helpful.
What's your timeline for actually getting the surveys done?
So it'll be released November 1st through January 31st. So there's 3 months to be able to complete the survey.
So the survey, okay, this is a silly question, mm-hmm. but the online version is fillable online. You submit it online.
Yes.
No printing or anything.
Correct.
Correct.
Yeah, it's through SurveyMonkey.
Okay.
So it'll be hopefully easy. I have, like I said, we just finalized the survey on Friday. I have sent it to translators this morning, and I have to go, that my project this afternoon is to get it up, get the survey book you this afternoon, at least the English version. So, moving fast on this.
We've been having a lot of meetings about the census that's taking place,
yes.
and they're trying to reach that same
yes.
population with your time frame ahead of them versus where
and
it could almost be something that could be collaborative.
I'm not sure about collaborative. Definitely similar timelines, which was not planned. And then on our flyer, we do have on there that this is not the census, so that they don't think that they are filling out the census. Hopefully they know, and
they won't think this is the census.
So
I'm pretty confident on that.
We're, you know, but we do also want people to fill out the census.
Right.
Because
yeah, and I was just speaking in terms of, you know, the just trying to do the same thing,
yes.
reach out to the same population.
Yes. Yes, and so I would like to, when I go out, I'll start going to a lot of community meetings promoting the survey. And so I will always make a note to say this is not the census, and to also please fill out the census. Please fill this one out and fill out the census. We do use a lot of census data in the CNA, usually through the American Community Survey, because it's the estimate that they release every year, which is a little bit newer data than obviously the 10-year census. And the 10-year census obviously won't be out anytime soon enough for us to use it with the current CNA.
The one thing that I appreciate that's actually the timing is not exactly right, you know, with the census. Because even though with the census you're trying to reach hard to reach populations, you know, a lot of the populations we're reaching with CNA are really not that hard to reach. Like we are doing a lot of outreach to make sure we get as much of the spectrum of people experiencing low income in Clark County. But a lot of it is not the, people experiencing homelessness, you know, LGBTQ, immigrant communities, you know, that we struggle with the census. I mean, it is, it's inclusive, but it, you know, the center mass isn't that population here. And this is a 7-page survey as it is. And if you tried to do both surveys at once, like, you would really, this is, you know, people would just, I'm not bothering with this. You know, so that's one of the reasons that it's good that we're doing this over a 3-month period to, I mean, that's why it takes 3 months, you know, to get it out there and give people enough time to kind of go through and get the feedback back to us. And then it's going to take us a whole year of analysis before we actually get the report.
And one of the biggest things I'm really excited about with this survey is we're actually asking about the barriers that are, they identify the needs in 7 different categories that they have for their family. And then they're also able to provide what the barriers are to getting them, so we can help identify, is it a gap that we just don't offer those services here in Clark County? Maybe it's a transportation issue, maybe it's a discrimination or bias issue. So we gave them several options, or maybe it's not an issue at all, they just aren't ready to go towards that goal at this point in their life. So we selected this time frame because it's after the time school starts, so the school settled down a little bit, so the homeless school liaisons and the family community resource centers are able to get them out and have a little bit better participation, not inundating their families, along with being able to hit the homeless, the Project Homeless Connect. So we'll have a table there, so people that are coming to access other services, we're hoping to get a better turnout for our households that are experiencing homelessness.
Thank you. Any other questions? All that you do to get it done.
So Jeff, don't send the survey to the census one. The census one to hear.
I would hope not.